listening to ThePorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast podcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. And OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Latitude Financial Group, which provides financial planning and investment strategies so you can start saving money and begin lowering taxes. And finally, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs. And now, the Porchcast.
All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 41 of the Porchcast. We are broadcasting from New Image Brewing here in Arvada. And I am excited. We are just a few weeks away from the Great American Beer Festival. Guys, are you feeling it? You guys excited?
I am not.
Feeling it. Hunter's not excited.
I'm not excited yet.
I'm going to need you to take the energy level up by like 20
notches.
Once
JB gets here, energy level.
He was just driving around the city. He's a little stressed.
The city sucks to drive
around. He was driving in the Hunter Ragemobile.
Yeah. He'll get real excited.
Made it just in time for the Porchcast to start. I just want to remind all of our listeners, be sure to follow us on Stitcher, iTunes, all of those listening devices that you utilize. You can interact with us on social media, on Twitter, at PorchDrinkingCO, or hit us up with a Facebook message on Facebook. We would love to get your comments, and we can address some of those in our next episode. We've got an exciting couple of weeks ahead of us. I don't know what happened. We're planning ahead for the first time in this entire podcast history.
Yeah, I looked at that email for a while. I wasn't sure if it was a pun, if it was a joke.
It was like an April Fool's joke that came in. We've got our next podcast lined up at Good Zur, and that's going to be happening next week, actually. And then the week after, the Great American Beer Festival, we've actually got two podcasts lined up. Wednesday, October 4th, we've got a podcast lined up with Sam Calagione at Monty Food and Beverage. Sam Calagione of Dogfish Head. I believe that's taking place at around 3:30. So that is going to be our first real live broadcast. So we invite everyone out to Avanti Food and Beverage for a live stream of our podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, Sam Calagione. And then the following night, we're going to be broadcasting after the first session of GABF from Avanti as well. And that's going to be a post-GABF Drunk Fest session. Porchcast recording. Yeah, that's sure to be very interesting. But before we get to those, I am very pumped to be here at New Image. We are joined by Brandon Capps. He is the owner, co-owner, and brewer of New Image. And we also have Rhiannon Myers from OnTap Credit Union, our fantastic sponsors of the show. And she is the branch manager for the Arvada branch up here at OnTap Credit Union. How's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Thanks so much for joining us. We're really pumped to talk to you all. As always, we welcome you. We're actually broadcasting from like a patio bench inside, which is pretty cool. It's a picnic bench, and it fits our porch drinking ethos very well.
Yeah. I mean, if you want me to talk about why we went this way with the tables, I totally can.
I want to hear the Bob Vila breakdown of the type of wood that you all chose. No,
yeah. Well, it's cherry, but it's just not stained.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get to more on the picnic tables here in just a moment. But lots to get to. We haven't broadcasted in a couple of weeks now, so a lot of things to touch on in the past few weeks. Lord Hobo going with private equity funding. We also want to touch on craft beer responding to all the horrific flooding and hurricanes that happened in the Southeast. Later on, we'll get to the major layoffs that occurred from ABI. And then we'll touch on some of the exciting events that are happening around for GABF. But first, I want to talk about New Image. Brandon,
yeah.
Thanks for joining us on the show. Thanks for having us here today. I am drinking the Old Town Regular. It's fantastic, easy drinking beer. Tell us a little bit more about Old Town Regular, and let's get into a little bit more about the history on New Image as a whole.
Totally. So with Old Town Regular, the name of the beer is kind of self-explanatory. This is a beer that we really designed post-inhabiting Arvada. We didn't really open with a... So to give a little perspective, it's a lager hybrid, to elaborate on what that means. It's brewed in the spirit of Helles, but fermented out with a Kolsch yeast so that we don't have to wait 4 months to serve it. The idea behind this was when we first opened, we were exclusively doing kind of hazy IPAs, mixed culture sours, a little bit of specialty stuff in between there. But the demographic in Arvada, you know, the people that were coming in every day, they may not have been asking for it directly, but they were asking for something in the lager field.
Just such an easy drinking, approachable beer.
Yeah, totally. So we developed the brand and the beer around a lot of our clientele. And, you know, for the brewpub, it's obviously one of the top-selling beers. We have people that, you know, come in pretty much every day and just drink 2-3 Old Town regulars, hang out. It's also a pretty solid seller around town for other bars in Old Town that carry it. But, it's a simple beer.
I like that the beer description made Hunter reach across the table to try to grab one of our beers to try. It was that enticing.
It's my go-to style.
Yeah.
I like to drink.
See, there's
a lot.
That energy. It's back.
Yeah. And so yeah, I have to go up for beers now. That allow.
Well, Hunter just needed a little beer in him, and then he's back
fine.
To normal.
I got the rage out in the car.
You know, one of the things that, you know, from a beer side, one of the inspirations behind it was that I really, really love Helles Lager. Over Pilsner, I know I'm like the minority there, but it seems like something that not nearly as many people want to focus on. Recently, I think it's seen a resurgence, especially in the craft industry.
Yeah,
a lot more Helles. Bierstadt Helles is an easy one to point at. Wibby's Helles is really, really solid. But we kind of wanted to go down that route, like a little bit less like hot bitterness and character, a little bit more like malt centric, but just still like a really good, easy drinking beer. So it's a fun one to develop. Great beer, sells super well, obviously, and yeah.
So utilitarian too, even for, you know, the hot days, this is clearly perfect thirst quencher. But, you know, as we start to transition, you know, that you mentioned the malt, kind of the malt backbone to it is perfect as you transition into fall, and
yeah,
it's still very very crushable, but also meets kind of your desires for something a little bit more with more of a backbone there. So.
Oh, we're always ready to give you a little bit more.
All right, we'll talk after the show. No, tell us a little bit more about New Image. How did you all get started? And how, you know, Arvada, you know, we have Rihanna in here from On Tap Credit Union. We want to touch a little bit more about the Arvada community as a whole with them. But I'd love to hear your all's take, because Arvada has come a long way in adding some newer breweries here in the past few months, or past few years, rather. And I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, how you all have seen this community evolve and change since you all joined.
Yeah. So the way I originally came to Arvada, my buddy was getting married in 2014, and we had his rehearsal dinner at, actually it was at DBC's Barrel Cellar on Platt Street.
Okay.
And it was great. I gave a toast. Everybody cried. It was awesome. But he lived right down here in the Water Tower Flats, just down the hill from Old Town. And he was like, hey guys, like, talk to the groomsmen. He's like, I really want to take you guys to this spot. It's like, there's not much in Arvada, but this is like our spot. It's like when me and Sierra go here on all of our, like, our nice dates when we've saved up a little money. And it was Arvada Tavern, which if you've never been to Arvada Tavern, you absolutely need to check it out. I mean, they've constantly received recognition around the entire Denver metro as one of the top cocktail bars anywhere in Colorado. They're phenomenal. And they actually have another location called Union Lodge Number 1 downtown that probably a lot more people are familiar with.
The Ramos Gin Fizz is fantastic.
So insanely good. The Blue Blazer is also amazing, but be warned, the bartenders will hate you as much as they hate me if you order those, because they take forever to make. And they have to pour fire between cups.
Yeah,
so,
that's the Vietnamese kind of like method.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
It's nuts. But So anyway, Brian took us to Arvada Tavern, and I was like, I've always sort of had this like this love of like these nostalgic historic districts where you've got older buildings and like nice aesthetic, because I've always been a little bit like kind of butthurt about how architecture's moved away from really giving a shit about how buildings look on the outside. You know, like it's nice when there's like some elements of design and like aesthetic in where you are. It's not just a flat-faced warehouse. So I really liked that about the district, and as we were walking through it, you know, really noticed that there was Arvada Beer Co. was still open at the time. They had a pretty prime real estate spot, you know, they were around. There was Sylvie's was around at that point, kitty corner to them. And then there was Arvada Tavern and I think maybe Fuzzy's Tacos. There really wasn't, honestly, hardly anything. In terms of where you'd go on a Friday night, there was Arvada Tavern.
Because, like, Yak and Yeti is, like, way farther out.
Yeah, and you know, as great beer has always been coming out of that spot. In terms of how people experience it, Yak and Yeti is much more known as an Indian restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, like, their buffet fucking kills it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not really like it's not so much like a
oriented.
Yeah, totally. Not like my language. So anyway, in terms of like Friday night spots, like it really was like it was like Arvada Tavern, and so I went in there and I forget what day of the week it was, but you know it was pretty busy. Their cocktails were phenomenal, food was phenomenal. It was the first time I'd ever tried Rocky Mountain oysters, which I found hilarious because I just watched some special on Colorado and saw that was a thing.
Like, I know the trick.
But I went there and I saw, like, you know, between price points and the way people were dressed and the thing that, like, rang home for me was the level of service. That, you know, you ask somebody about a cocktail, even if you didn't know, like, anything about liquor and cocktails, going into that experience, you left feeling like, I could be, like, a liquor snob. Like, I know everything there is to know now just because my server was that well-educated. And so I felt like, you know, if that's what this demographic appreciates, like, that's what I see myself doing with a brewery. And at the time, I was still a part of Brew Gentleman Beer Company out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I started that brewery straight out of college with a couple other guys when we were just, like, 21 and 22 years old. But I was kind of, like, thinking about moving out here. I loved Colorado. I'd always wanted to live out here my whole life. Never really quite found a place on the East Coast that I really felt at home. And so Arvada reminded me a lot of Decatur, which is a kind of township city in Atlanta that's just all the best food, all the best drink, really nice historic district, really good clientele, not the youngest, but like they really cared about what they were drinking and eating. And I felt like I really saw that in the Arvada clientele, especially in Arvada Tavern when I first came here. And so that was like the inception moment. And we looked at Rhino, and we looked at South Pearl, we looked all over the Denver metro, and honestly, like, this building specifically, it came up at the right time, the right price, with the right, you know, landlords, and that sort of what solidified our spot here. Not to say that we didn't put in a ton of offers on a lot of spots in Old Town, because we certainly did. Interestingly enough, like I was saying earlier, we made an offer on the building that OnTap Credit Union's in now, no worries. It was hard to like really get me off of the idea of being in Old Town, and it's interesting because, you know, since I first looked at this place, the exact number escapes me, but it's somewhere in the name of like 8 to 10 restaurants have opened in Old Town, which is crazy because it literally went from like maybe a couple places to go to like this is like a district all of a sudden. I mean, we were thinking like 3 to 5 years this would be a retail district, and it just happened overnight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. With no notice.
Now, you talk about you come from like the Pittsburgh area. I notice, you know, a lot of the beers here in New Image have been inspired by the New England IPA style. Tell us a little bit about kind of how that's developed over your all's existence and I guess your approach towards this New England hazy style IPA.
Yeah. So that's another interesting story. What's funny about that is when I moved to Pittsburgh and started brewing for Brew Gentlemen, I didn't really like IPA all that much. In fact, as a home brewer, and when I was first getting into craft beer, it was kind of one of my least favorite styles. I mostly at the time what was available was like you had a little bit of kind of mid East Coast IPA, like the Dogfish Head 90 and 60 and so on and so forth, Stone. You know, whatever the hell else was available at that time. It was mostly West IPA or West Coast IPA centric. There was a couple other things. I just wasn't into like the super bitter, super dry kind of portfolio. And with Brew Gentlemen, we sort of started out with this like kind of golden orange colored West Coast IPA. It's more like caramel malt centric, trying to really balance like the bitterness and fruity hop characteristics with some sort of backbone, some sort of sweetness. And slowly over time, we started changing different things, and we hired an assistant brewer named Zach Gordon, who's now the head brewer for Brew Gentlemen, who's pretty damn well known for brewing this style at this point. But he and I worked together to change what we were doing there, and we slowly went from this like orange-colored West Coast IPA to like, well, let's try a more like a more fruit-forward yeast because we want to pair off this hop character. We're using like a totally neutral West Coast style yeast that dries it out like crazy. So let's add that fruitiness. And then it's like, well, you know, we're seeing that crystal malt's really buffering our ability to see shelf stability and the hop character. And it's dropping off a lot sooner. It's getting a lot sweeter, showing more oxidative character. So let's back down on the dextrins. Let's back down on the crystal malts. And but let's still figure out how to keep that sweetness in that backbone. So you know, some people were starting to play around with like oats and wheat as a way to build the kind of mouthfeel profile, and then less attenuative yeast to keep more sugar instead of hitting like 10.04, 10.08 final gravities, looking at like 10.15, 10.18s now becoming like, hey, that's like not an unreasonable target, even though for like two decades I was like, nah, dude, what the hell did you just brew? That's like way too sweet. So we started playing around with that, playing around with the water profile, and slowly but surely we went from this kind of like orange colored semi like malt backbone East Coast IPA to this super, you know, late hop edition, low bitterness, high mouthfeel, pale. And hazy was really never part of the conversation. It was more of like an affect of brewing what we were brewing. And
yeah, it was a result, you know, of the process.
But yeah, totally a result, not really a goal. But we did used to have a joke that was like, you know, once it drops bright, like it's dead, like it's just, it's not good anymore. It's just might as well like go ahead and throw the rest of it away. But that was sort of how we got there. It was like a course of like maybe 2 years of just brewing very, very slightly different variations and then getting there. And then when I left Brew Gentleman and moved out here, really, you know, the goal was just to have, we didn't honestly see IPA becoming such a big part of our portfolio initially. We had the East Coast transplant, which the branding for that, a lot of people like misname it like New England transplant or something that points back to like being, you know, East Coast beer. We originally kind of put that out there as sort of a counterpoint to the whole Colorado native thing. Because we're like, you know what, like one, it's not that crowded. Go live on the East Coast for 5 minutes and then come back and complain about how crowded Colorado is. But two, like I legitimately have felt ever since I moved here, like I was just born in the wrong place and finally have found like where my heart's been at home my whole life. Like I get it out
Colorado
here.
Colorado has
like,
that effect on people, right?
I get along with the people out here. I love the outdoors, but I mean, more than anything, it's just the culture. Like I feel so at home here. And I wanted to brand that feeling of like, you know what, I might not be from here, but like I still have the same amount of pride as anyone who was born here 20 years ago. Or 25 or 30 or 50 or whatever you are.
Jesse, do you feel the same way? I know you're from the East Coast as well.
Get out. Out.
I've seen a lot of change over the last decade in a way that I feel maybe isn't, I don't know. I don't love it maybe as much as you do. But
yeah.
I'm from the upstate New York and I miss the Adirondacks quite a bit. But yeah, Colorado's changed quite a bit over the last decade.
I can certainly imagine. I mean, I've been here 2 years. So like, I'm aware that my kind have infected your beautiful East Coastless mentality.
I don't see it that way at all. I think that you know, I've been out here for 8 years now, so I'm still not a transplant by any means, but I definitely call this place home. And I think as long as people come in here with the right mentality and want share that same desire to make this a better place, then I say bring them on.
Yeah, totally.
Coming from a native, I feel like I should chime in here.
I'm born and raised. I think
29 years
next
young.
No, I'm just kidding.
I've always welcomed people coming from out of state. I know there's a lot of dickhead natives that are like really anti people moving here, which I think is actually hilarious because it is a beautiful place, and I'm so, I don't know, happy to have it like shared like the, I don't know, the state that I grew up in, the outdoors, and I don't see why anyone can say that's just like theirs. It's always baffled me that there's natives that feel like they're just, because they're born here, they're solely entitled, especially because no one's truly a native. I mean, I don't want to get too political, but Native Americans were here a long time ago.
Here we go. Hunter's on his...
I'm just saying, I don't know. I think it's fine. Yeah, like you said, I've been to areas. My family was in San Diego. I've been to the East Coast, and it really isn't as bad here. To your point, Jesse, I mean, it's getting pretty shitty in some ways. Traffic, I mean, yeah, I've seen the changes, rent, but I don't know. If you want to stay here, you'll adapt.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too. Like, I've never in my life have I lived somewhere where you could drive 20 minutes outside the city center and see just like acres and acres and acres of pasture. I mean, just endless. Yeah. Like, I mean, in Atlanta, like driving home to my parents' house from school in downtown, it was just hour and a half, 2.5 hours, depending. You know, it was only like 30 miles, but it took anywhere from 30 minutes to 2.5 hours to get there. And just endless development. I mean, never ever stopped, never slowed down.
Right.
And so being here, it's like, it's incredible how quickly you can get to just fresh air and like no development.
Totally true.
Which I think is why people come here. I have kind of a unique perspective in that I was born here, but I actually grew up in Southern California. So I've kind of lived on both ends of the spectrum. I've been back here now in Colorado for a little over 10 years. And I always, you know, thought of Colorado as home, but didn't realize, you know, how home it really is till I moved back. And I think that's, you know, people come out here. My husband, for example, came out here after visiting like once. I think you get a lot of people that kind of have that ideal of Colorado where they come and they visit, like Brandon did, and they go, you know, this place is pretty awesome. That's where I want to be. And I think that's a pretty good dynamic. I think you have a lot of other people in places that's where they're born. They don't ever think of moving away. And I think we get a lot of diversity because of that.
Totally.
I appreciate that.
I will say Old Town Arvada is one of the cooler spots. I live really close to here, like 10 minutes away. Love coming up here. Like you said, the growth has seemed like it's happened so quickly up here. My business partner's from here. John from Inland Island, East Labs, is from here. And they just always talk to one another about how this town has changed so much from their high school days to now. We actually were looking at the same building that the credit union's in as well. I think there was some environmental issues or something that we ended up not moving forward with on that. But that was, what, 3-4 years ago that we were looking at it. And this town, from Klein's to the Freet's place to Steuben's moving in recently, like, there's just constantly so much. Even 12 volt, if you just want a Coors Original down the road. So, yeah, I think you landed, like, a really great spot here in Old Town.
That's funny because we I called the number that was on the front of y'all's building back when we were looking at real estate.
How funny, too. Really?
That thing was just like, it didn't look like anything was happening there. They were like, no, we've already got a brewery. I'm like, damn it. There's a little
There's
bit too late.
There's only so many buildings left in this metro area that can
But, you know, to
a
get, Tristan, to get back to your original question of like kind of the New England style thing and how we ended up in that. So it was the only type of IPA that I really ever enjoyed brewing professionally or personally. I kind of tried running the gambit on things, and it was just like this soft bitterness, more like balanced and like mouthfeel and just flavor-driven IPA that wasn't just like experiential the way that like...
It wasn't just a bomb in your face of like how like, hoppy can this be.
Kind of the way sours were 5 years ago, where it was just like acidity, like all about the like, oh man, I've never felt that before. It's like, yeah, but what did you taste? And that's how like a lot of IPAs came off to me originally. We started doing that out here, just kind of brewing the IPA that I like to brew. And then it got a brand, like this New England style IPA, this hazy IPA. And honestly, like it's been kind of it's been a little interesting to adapt to it because some of the
does the trendiness of it kind of make you hurt a little bit?
So I mean I've discussed like some of the challenges of this from a lot of different angles, and I'd say like with like socially speaking, one of the challenges with this is that this style, people don't really understand like the package stability. They don't understand the cost associated with it. By moving to wholly late additions and really inefficient dry hopping techniques in order to encapsulate a certain amount of like polyphenol retention and like flavor retention that you're getting out of the hops, it's not very economical. And in terms of like a packaged product, it's been one where we transitioned from being a very retail focused, very like brew pub focused facility to, as our production's grown, like, man, like 6-8 pounds per barrel in a, you know, $10 six pack, it ain't happening. Like it's just not. And trying to balance like how do we make the beer that we set out to make, also make it shelf stable, also make it affordable, something that like we can actually reasonably walk away with enough margin to pay our staff to make it, and then also point people back to the brew pub. So there are a lot of challenges associated with this style and brewing it correctly, and I think a lot of people get caught up in the affect of like it's hazy and it's this and that and the other, and like I think that a lot of the people that have been brewing it for a while kind of understand it's like, you know, low bitterness, a good balance of malt character, but not coming from crystal malts, more coming from a lack of attenuation. Like those, I would say, are like the key like focuses of this style of IPA.
As with anything, you got to have people who are doing it the right way and making a great product versus just following the popularity of a trend.
Yeah,
right,
you know, I've had some bad hazy IPAs.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny
flat
is
or like nothing, like they taste like almost nothing.
But I've also had some bad West Coast style IPAs.
Oh, totally. Yeah, you've had a bad anything. All, but it just hurts. Like you said, the trend. It's like, yeah, it's a trend. Yeah. So you have people trying to keep up with it, but they're almost ruining it, especially for someone that's going out and trying the trend. Yeah.
You know, a balance of economics and style that we faced a challenge with is that. When we harvest into second, third, and fourth generations of yeast for this style, we see, I think, flavor improvement, but we see flocculation, like the way that it's been happening in West Coast style IPAs and everything else forever. Problem is, we started canning those batches, and people were like, what the hell? This isn't a New England IPA. It's like, it's all clear. It's not even hazy. And it's like, well, that wasn't the point. Like, fruitiness and like.
We're going for the flavor.
Yeah, we're going for the flavor. Yeah. And so we've actually, like, we faced some challenges with, like, man, it's really hard to be economical with first-generation yeast strains every time. But, like, you get a different kind of stress and results in terms of flocculation with a first-generation yeast strain versus a second, third, fourth, fifth. And traditional harvesting techniques would promote better flocculation. I mean, that's what we've been taught historically as brewers to sort of select is as a better mutant. We've had to really change a lot of our techniques around kind of giving, you know, on it, frankly, giving people what they ask for, like this less attenuative, less flocculent, more like colloidally driven thing, which has also been sort of like a little bit of a challenge for me because I'm like, that's not really what it's about. It's not what makes the beer good. Like it's
focusing
a component,
on the wrong reasons.
But it's yeah.
For sure.
Not to say I don't love brewing it, but it's a style that. We've run into the most challenges from perception and package stability and how to sell this, especially in this market that like it's very young and doesn't fully understand how to consume this style just yet.
Totally.
It's so hype driven.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break real quick and be sure to give a shout out to all of our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment with Brandon Capps over here at New Image, but also we're going to be welcoming on Rihanna and Myers from On Tap Credit Union. Chat a little bit more about what they've got going on, and then we'll get to our topics of discussion here in just a bit. You're listening to The Porchcast on porchdrinking.com. We'll see you after the break. Once again, folks, this is Tristan from The Porchcast reminding you to visit our friends at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street. They're your pour-your-own draft system featuring over 40 incredible beers. They have also got wine, too, on tap. You can go and sample as much or as little as of anything as you'd like. It's basically like going to the adult version of a Froyo shop. And during the week of the Great American Beer Festival, they're featuring a host of events, including a night with Shorts Brewing, a night with Odd 13, as well as a tremendous tap takeover from Crooked Stave Artisans, featuring some of the best brands from all around the country descending upon Denver for the week of the Great American Beer Festival. Also, we're really pumped to announce that we've got a pretty cool event ourselves featuring beer media from all across the country for a BYOB bottle share event. It's called Bangers and Smashed. It's the morning of Thursday, October 5th, taking place at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen. So be sure to visit First Draft Taproom and Kitchen for all your beer needs. Once again, that's First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Alrighty, folks, we're back with episode 41 of The Porchcast, broadcasting from New Image Brewing. Once again, we are joined by Rihanna Myers from On Tap Credit Union, as well as you heard earlier from Brandon Capps, owner and brewer here at New Image.
Rihanna, I'm going to shift gears over here to On Tap real quick. First of all, a big thank you for supporting the show. We really love how much you all have focused on the craft beer industry and, you know, the people who drink great beer, make great beer, all of that, and the communities where they all live, I believe. You know, why an On Tap credit union versus a traditional banking establishment? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, if you know anything about credit unions started basically as a cooperative movement, typically some sort of trade. You know, essentially the workers got together and said, hey, you know, let's make loans to each other, let's support each other. And that's kind of where the credit union movement was born. So at a credit union, you know, we don't have shareholders that we're trying to make happy. Our members own the credit union. So, you know, those are the people that we focus on. Those are the people that we work day in and day out to please. And so that definitely creates a huge difference there, in that when you come into the credit union, you're not just a person. You're not just a bank account number. You know, somebody that we know your family. We know when you go on vacation, you know, all that kind of thing. It's just a much more personal, service-oriented kind of place.
Cool. And you all are definitely a little bit more unique in terms of your all's approach. I mean, first, you all invest in really great beer opportunities and organizations like our own, but also you really do try to reach out to this community. And you can tell that even, you know, earlier before the show started, I actually went over to the Arvada branch, took a walk around, and at first I thought I was actually in a brewery. They had everything from the garage doors that open up to lots of, you know, draft lines that actually have the tap handles, and, you know, they even have a communal area that feels like a tap room. So why the focus on the beer community?
Well, that's our heritage. You know, we started as Coors Credit Union, and it was Coors employees that got together and said, hey, you know, let's help each other. And that's who we served for a long time. And, you know, when you brand yourself like that, sometimes people don't realize that you don't have to be a Coors employee to join the credit union.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to be more inclusive. We wanted to branch out. You know, our membership's been really loyal and has made it possible for us to, you know, start moving into other venues and you know, other counties where if you live or work, you can become a member and things like that. So we just really embrace that heritage. It's always been with us for over 60 years. And, you know, there's so many craft breweries in Colorado. It's such a part of the culture and the lifestyle here, and that's really what we support, is the Colorado lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, the breweries, that really is a huge part of the Colorado lifestyle, and you get all walks of life. You know, you'll come into New Image here on a Tuesday, and you've got groups of older people. A little while, all the families will be coming in, and, you know,
it's all very community driven.
Yeah, it's very community driven, and that's what we're all about.
Absolutely.
And so, that's what we try to support.
This is really serendipitous that you're here, because about 5 months ago, Call to Arms tried to go to the Golden Branch and cash our $1 billion check due to the acquisition brought on by Pete Coors and Coors Brewing.
I like how you refer to it as the acquisition. The infamous acquisition.
So we still currently have that $1 billion check, and are you guys... Do you think you could take it? Because it wouldn't fit in the ATM.
And you're going to the wrong branch this entire time.
Yeah.
One of those big...
It's the one they gave us.
How big is your bill acceptor?
Yeah,
do you have
I don't think
bill
it's that
acceptor
size.
Being a more modernized
yeah.
branch?
Yeah.
I mean, they do serve, you know, the Coors, former Coors employees and whatnot. So, it makes perfect sense that you should be able to cash a check that comes from Coors directly, right?
Part of me is starting to wonder if they were playing a prank on us, Coors. So.
Does yours pick up Sharpie, by chance?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We definitely are pretty technologically advanced, but I'm not sure that we can run that through the scanner properly.
Rather than tying up time on the podcast, maybe we'll just chat after.
Sounds good.
Okay.
I think you need to go to the ballroom branch.
That'd be awesome.
Well, but, you know, talking about supporting brewers and the brewing industry... Maybe for a small, mid-sized brewery that's looking for financing, what
what kind of resources do you all offer in that sense?
So we are really ramping up the products and services that can support breweries. We're really trying to move in that direction and getting a lot of things kind of lined up. Right now we can do real estate loans, we can do small loans for equipment, financing. We are going to have options soon for merchant services and things like that. Even if it comes down to just, you know, some sort of cash flow account for accounts receivable, we are getting into all of those things to be able to support a brewer who maybe needs to move to that next level. And that's our kind of our target market right now. And we're hoping through a lot of feedback from those folks, including actually Brandon was on a panel that we attended several months ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just trying to get information from the breweries and the brewers themselves as to what do you need? And we've done a lot of that kind of research, and we hope that we're coming up with some good solutions for those folks.
That's fantastic. Really cool. Well, Brandon, I want to touch on this because we talked to Brandon about it, but how have you seen the Arvada community kind of grown and evolved over the past few years?
So we actually, the Arvada location before, we were there for 10 years.
Sure.
And an opportunity came up where we could start to look for a different location, and we settled on Old Town just because of the feel here.
And you all apparently found a physical location that everybody in the beer industry wanted.
It's so funny. I really have heard that from a lot of different people, and I don't know what made our landlord decide that we were the ones, but I'm thankful for that. We have a great location. We do get people that walk in and think we're a bar or restaurant, and we have to tell them no, but we can give you an auto loan or you know, something like that. So
you'll give me money instead. I think that's a good trade-off. Yeah.
Wow. We do a lot of
trash
that.
My $1 billion check.
And as you saw too, when you come in there, it's not a traditional bank feel.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have a traditional teller line where they're kind of behind a desk, or you know, it's very community feeling. Even when you go into an office, it's not like a big desk with somebody in a suit sitting behind it. It's, you know, we're real people. We have a very casual dress code. You know, we're going to talk to you about whatever it is that you need to talk about.
Cool. Well, next time I stop in, I expect to talk to my branch manager sitting on a brew system, and to really make it fully authentic. I want a 10 barrel system. I want bright tanks around them. You know, I want everything.
CO2 going off. Yeah.
I think I probably have to take out an office or two to do that.
Yeah.
But I do have some New Image beer in my fridge. So
oh, fantastic.
I can help you out there.
Good deal. Cool. Well, thank you so much for all that you all do for the beer industry, and also for serving this community as much as you do. We've been really pumped to get to know you guys around the past few months, and it's great to finally have you all on the show.
Cool. Thanks a lot for having
so
me.
Much. Yeah. Cool. Brandon, I want to get back to some exciting times that are happening around here. I know that you all have had some advances with your Dyad series. Can you tell us a little bit about Dyad, and then also what you're doing in terms of innovation right now in with that series?
Yeah, totally. So Dyad's been probably one of the longest projects that we've worked on in terms of the New Image portfolio. And what's kind of interesting about Dyad and just sort of our sour portfolio in general is that when I started New Image, when I started transitioning out of Brew Gentleman and into New Image, sours were by far the focus. And it's kind of funny that we've gotten noticed for IPA over that, because with Dyad, I got introduced to kombucha, buying like GT's, you know, ginger, the most like prolific kombucha in any grocery store you can possibly imagine. GT's like ginger kombucha. I had that at like a Giant Eagle in Pittsburgh at one point, and I was like, man, this is like really good way to not drink alcohol for like 5 minutes.
At most.
Yeah. And,
let's not get too crazy here.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I like, for whatever reason, like, I have a palate for, like, that more, like, vinegary kind of sour characteristic. So what I thought was really interesting about kombucha as I got, like, more into it was, you know, it's got a very, like, similar profile to what you get out of, like, some more, like, acetic and, like, aged out Brett beers. But it only takes, like, a couple weeks, really, to make a kombucha. Maybe a month. But not nearly the timeline that it takes to make like an aged out Brett beer. And so I started thinking about like, huh, I wonder if like the microbial profile of kombucha, if that might be conducive to making a good beer. And so I started out by like taking beer wort, inoculating it with like kombucha microbes. That was god awful. That was like the most awful like beer vinegar kind of thing you could imagine. So I was like, okay, so that did not work. I started brewing like finished out beers and blending it with kombucha and trying to find the right balance. And eventually what we settled on with the project with Dyad was a mixture of a it's already a pretty like pretty solid mixed culture sour. It's a cold side fermented Brett and lacto you know saison kind of. I mean, saison's like become this catch-all category for whatever we do that's not something else. So we made that base beer. It still had enough like residual sugar that once it was blended with the kombucha post fermentation, that we saw some really cool development in the package. Especially, ironically, if we focus on higher TPO, so dissolved oxygen in the package, we actually see a really cool development post packaging. So one of the things that's interesting about Dyad is where for the rest of our brands we focus on really low oxygen carryover into the package so it doesn't spoil. With Dyad, we actually focus on a certain amount of oxygen carryover so that the Brettanomyces and Acetobacter can really work with VO2 and the residual sugar, add a little bit more carbonation, and develop a little bit more complex acidity in the package. So that's like, we've spent maybe 2 years just brewing with kombucha in the cold side of the process. We don't pasteurize it. We don't boil it off. We don't do anything to make this a, you know, kind of like a pasteurized sour. It's a fully live culture product. And then recently we've sort of been experimenting with taking the base and infusing different flavor profiles into it. We're about to start working on a dark sour version, kind of based on more of like a quad base infused with kombucha. We've been barrel aging Dyad, and we just recently purchased a 30 barrel fooder that we're going to start doing Solera style fermentations out of. But this is a huge focus. I mean, like everything else we do, we take a lot of pride in it. We put a lot of effort into it, but everything else has come a lot easier, honestly, than other than package stability and New England IPA. I think developing how to do mixed culture fermentations with kombucha has been one of the biggest focuses of our portfolio, and just the kind of the scientific and the approach
side
to it.
It's a different element of fermentation that is kind of changing the game of what our understanding is of this liquid. So
and kind of like one of the end goals of Dyad is like to create this sort of everyday approachable, like in terms of a price point, version of a long aged sour that you might normally pay substantially more for. And I love long aged sours, but I brew beer for a living, so I can't afford to buy them typically. So this started as a project of necessity, somewhat. But yeah, it's been a really fun like passion project, and we really plan to expand this brand and what we're doing with the kombucha saison kind of in general. Like I said, we've got the barrel aged variants are starting to really show a lot of interesting characteristics. Plan to debut some of those during our Colorado Invitational during GABF.
I want to get into the Colorado Invitational and we'll transition there into some bigger other GABF events that we're really excited about. But you know, this is definitely one of the first ones that stood out to me. This looks like a really fantastic event. You all have a host of Colorado focused breweries that are very, I'd say, kind of like minded in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about the Colorado Invitational.
So, you know, it's funny, the idea to do this came out of Jake, he's like the head of sales with Weldworks. He was down here hanging out. They brought us, I think the collab they did with like Great Notion or something like that. We were hanging out, drinking beer, and we were just like, man, we should like really do something during GABF to like kind of kick off the week and like focus a little bit more on like breweries that aren't as accessible to, you know, people living in Denver and people who are coming from out of town. And, you know, clearly Greeley, in terms of like sought after beers that aren't as accessible, was like kind of an interesting way to focus. And then it sort of from there built into this idea of like, well, why don't we just like gather a group of people who are kind of like known for similar things, but they have their own take on it. And in the midst of a festival where, you know, I love GABF. There's a great energy. It's a fun fest. But I'd say one of the only downsides to it is that you really have to, if you want to try anything that you set out to try, you have to have a game plan. And
it's still likely not going
to it's a challenge to really, like, to see the people you want to see, to try the beers you want to try. So what we thought is, like, why don't we take, like, a really, really curated list of breweries that we know people that are coming to Colorado to seek out during, you know, this national influx to Colorado for beer. Put them in a concentrated setting and give people access to them in a way that's like, don't line up at the door. Don't rush in. Don't try to get to everything like immediately. We've made sure everyone's bringing enough beer that like you can try it. Like we'll kind of ask like honor system, like, hey, like try to like sample everything before you go back for like seconds or thirds or whatever. Like we're really trying to make sure people get to try everything that's available at this fest. And we're making sure that all the breweries bring plenty to pour substantially for that, so that, you know, these sought-after beers, they don't just run out in the first 5 minutes with a big line. Yeah. You can take your time. You can talk to the people, get to know their story, get to know the background on the product.
I love the collection. I mean, Odd 13, Cerebral, Four Noses, Wiley Roots, Weldworks, you guys. I mean, that's a really formidable group of breweries that, like you said, it's a little bit harder to get to sometimes. And for all the out-of-staters that are coming into town for GABF, that's a great opportunity to sample some of Colorado's best that aren't directly in downtown Denver.
Yeah, and that was kind of what we were going for too. Is like let's bring in like a lot of things people would seek out. Like, oh, I'm in town for GABF, and I don't know if I have time to go to Lafayette and Greeley and Fort Collins and everywhere else. And that's kind of where I think we're headed for the future of the Colorado Invitational. Is rotating around with like Colorado breweries that might be less accessible, and I think maybe in future years what we're hoping to do is reach out to out-of-state breweries that Coloradans don't normally get to experience as frequently.
Yeah.
Maybe doing it more frequently throughout the year, not just during GABF. During GABF, focusing on the Colorado ones, but the overall intent with this is, let's really give people an intimate experience. You know, we're not going to oversell this. We probably could grow this into something that has a lot higher attendance and generates a lot more money. But the focus is really more about getting people a more intimate experience. It's like, you know that feeling of like when you see a band when they only have like a handful of fans that show up for every show.
Yeah, when it's in like a record store.
Yeah, like, and it's like there's like 100 people. Yeah. And like you always like when you hear them on the radio, you're like, oh man, like I remember when I saw them, it was like 100 people and it was like such a small venue. Like that's the feeling we're going for with the Invitational. It's not the huge, like, you know, mile high venue. It's the intimate, like we really got to like see those people. We got to like experience them and see what they were doing. The challenge, I think, in future years will be to not lose focus on that. We've already seen a lot of interest in this fest and some good write-ups and good media around it. So,
cool. And that's October, yeah. Wednesday, October 4th, the week of Great American Beer Festival. The event kicks off at noon, correct?
Yeah, and there's two sessions.
So definitely encourage folks to get tickets. Where can they find tickets?
They're on Eventbrite. You can find that link through our Facebook page. I can't pretend to remember the random number that was assigned to our Eventbrite thing.
But sure to check out the New Image Brewing Facebook page, and you can find out all the information for the Colorado Invitational, correct?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now, guys, Jesse, Hunter, I want to turn to you guys. Sam, I apologize for not reintroducing you all at the beginning of the show. That's my bad. But
it's all right, bud.
That's right. You know, forget about me all the time.
Deeply offended. The levels are off.
Levels are all off. Sam is just going to purposely make me sound like really high-pitched throughout the entire episode. So.
Yeah, I'm just going to go get another beer.
Hunter, hey, how you doing, buddy?
Oh.
Why don't you go get me a beer, Tristan?
Oh, that's so sad. No, what are you guys excited about? It's GABF. There's lots going on.
Seriously.
Yeah, I feel like every year the events just like multiply by three from the previous year. I'm literally working on like 6 hours of sleep per night, probably five actually, of just like inputting events into our own event calendar. So what do you, Jesse, what do you got? I know you all have the Catalina Wine Mixer.
We do.
Returning.
Second annual, yeah.
Second annual. Tell us a little bit more about that. Call to Arms.
Just another Step Brothers joke that kind of materialized into something real.
just so happens that we make a bunch of wine barrel age and poor barrel age beers at Call to Arms. And last year we had 5. This year we have 7, ranging from the beer that Bell's came after us with that became Name Your Own Beer, Kostermonger, Tart Apple Ale, a couple versions of our Punch and Barrel Age beers. And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of fun, man. We like being able to get people to the last topic we were talking about, even though we're like in Metro Denver. We're still kind of considered on the other side of the earth sometimes, being on Tennyson Street. That's why I was looking at that list like, I think Cerebral kind of lucked out on that one.
Kansas. But, they're from Kansas.
Yeah, sure.
We're on the border.
And so yeah, Catalina Wine Mixer, and we're hoping to have some 80s Billy Joel playing with Pick and Howl.
Yeah.
And then shit, man, even the losers after party on
GABF right.
Saturday.
If you didn't what happens when you all take home like 4 medals?
We're gonna go into the winners area, which we have designated.
Okay.
It's really fancy.
Is it like that me and Kyle have already planned on attending the Even the Losers party?
I hope the people are hoping to lose because you get $2 off your beers and shit, man. It's going to be a lot of
the
fun.
The fourth place medal.
That's, fourth place medals? Yeah. Yeah. You get your own keg for the losers? It's freaks can and we, geeks, man.
Can we get like a podium for like all the different levels of losing? Like
okay.
And like fake medals that you put around your neck? Like
I've been
losers medals? Yeah.
Different levels
we have
of losing?
A bunch of alley space we can do some stuff in. So, other than that, man, just the GABF in general. I love it. He mentioned it earlier, but it's got a great energy. I was talking to you earlier, Tristan, about the event you have going on at Union Station. So, just all the great breweries from around the country that come into town and bring their events with them. I love it.
Yeah, our Union Station event should be pretty fun. It's the same day as the Colorado Invitational, but I think with the 2 sessions, I think you can definitely hit up both events. But essentially, at Terminal Bar, Ratio's teamed up with Modern Times, Fremont Brewing, and Rheingeist for a tap takeover of Terminal Bar down at Union Station. So once you get off the plane, get into town on Wednesday, you can take the A-line down to Union Station, grab a beer from any of those 4.
At least for
beers.
Another couple months, you can take the A-line.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Before it shuts down. But yeah, the Catalina Wine Mixer from Call to Arms, 2nd annual, October 5th, Thursday, October 5th, from 12 to 10 p.m. I definitely want to come check that out.
Please do.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be a grand old
time. Hunter, what do you got that you're pumped about?
I'm pumped about October 9th. And is that Monday after GABF?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big event.
Yeah.
It's called Nap All Day.
GABF is over. Nap All Day. My assistant is flying back from Ithaca, New York to hang out with me that week. I'm really pumped about that.
Hunter's got this weird connection with this intern that we had.
His name is State New Yorkers, man.
His name is Joshy Boy.
JB. Yeah, he was our intern over the summer. He followed me around everywhere. Dude's awesome. We've actually flown him back out to keep my mind straight for the
That's
five,
intern of
five
the year
days of
accolades
GABF.
Right there.
Yeah, intern of the year. He's way smarter than me, way better than me. Way younger than me, though, so I can keep him down that way.
So essentially, we should have just told him to just drop out and just take your position instead.
Oh yeah, we've offered him a job. He's coming on in December when he graduates.
I'll be sure to salute JB when he gets into town.
JB's the man. See, I'm pumped about that. We've got Ratio. We got a lot. We've got close to 10 events that week, which I'm excited for, but not excited for.
And then the big closeout karaoke.
The big closeout
Saturday
karaoke
night.
Party. Yeah, Saturday night.
I've already got Brandon online to what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh God. So I think the better part is arguing about who gets to be Tom DeLonge and who gets to be Mark in singing Blink-182 covers.
Be careful with that band. There are some diehard Blink fans, like Blink, not Blink-182, Blink fans.
Yeah, so
don't offend some of the Ratio employees.
Yeah, so it'll kind of depend on who my company is and how drunk I am, but
just go for it.
Yeah, I'm pretty well expecting that it's going to happen.
This is our 3rd year of doing it. The last 2 years have been super fun, super successful.
It's
a
the
lot
ultimate
of, like,
industry closeout.
It's the ultimate
for
industry
GABF.
Closeout. I've been worried that it's going to be dead because people are just over drinking beer, and they're absolutely not. Yeah, at least if there's karaoke involved. The talent's been really great, too.
Yeah, talent's actually been very good.
It's, like, awkwardly good.
Yeah.
Like, why did you... Have you guys all been, like, practicing for a year?
Yeah.
It's pretty bizarre.
It's like
cool
the Whitty
breweries.
Folks at CBC when they play cornhole. They've got...
What the fuck?
I don't know if you knew this about Wibby Brewing, but they are the best cornhole players I've ever seen in my life.
In any brewery in the country. They took first last year at CBC and
second
in
this
Philly.
Past year. Yeah.
And second this past year. Stupid good. Like, stop it. Get back to your brewing.
Long Tucky,
yeah.
Baby.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot to do out there. No, but actually, this, I mean, the lineup of events for this year's GABF is really very impressive. You've got the traditional ones, What the Funk, which I know they get shit on a lot, but because of 2 years ago, I think 2 years ago, where the event was a little bit oversold, the venue wasn't the best place, but, you know, last year they came back really strong, it went back to its roots, still one of the most impressive collection of beers I've ever come across, and I'm pumped to attend and try some beers there this year. Rare Beer Fest is also one of those elite level collection of beers. We also have, you know, Beers Made by Walking, which is one of the more unique events. It focuses on foraging and beers that are made with forage ingredients. And then you have some stuff that's a little bit more unique. I want to talk about yesterday, actually, Santa Fe Brewing and Meow Wolf announced that they're going to be doing an event together, I believe the Thursday night after GABF. That's going to be really interesting. Meow Wolf, of course, is the big art installation down in Santa Fe. They're looking for a spot here in Denver to actually launch a Meow Wolf location. And from what I hear, Summit Music Hall is actually going to be turned into a live art installation for that event. So should be really interesting with that one.
Very cool.
And then House of Flying Barrels. I think that's one that has a lot of mystery shrouded behind it. I know some information that I can't fully reveal at this point, but I'll say that it's going to be an impressive launch for a brand that is very familiar to folks here. And from what I hear, they're trying to, they've got a lot of breweries that are canning their beers, coming out. Are you guys involved in that one by any chance?
Not Flying Barrels.
Okay, not Flying Barrels. But they're trying to build the largest, like, canned beer pyramid with, like, cans that you finish drinking. So when you're done,
I'm gonna fuck that pyramid up.
Hunter's just gonna roll right through. He's gonna bring a giant like tricycle and just like roll straight through Mario Kart style.
I'm just
style.
Gonna walk by and knock it over.
Take one on the bottom corner.
Don't judge me, Jesse. I really love the.
I'm not
pink...
actually gonna do that.
This all ties together.
The Pink Boots Rare Beer Tasting, which features lady brewers from all around the country, showcasing their beers. I think that's such a cool event. And then you've got special tappings like Toppling Goliath. CSA always brings a huge, huge lineup of out-of-state breweries. Sam, what are you pumped about?
Pretty much anything and all karaoke. Otherwise, there's just so much shit going on, I really have no idea what I'm doing this week.
There's a lot.
Between Star Bar's karaoke, your guys' karaoke, I'm going to be hoarse by the time Monday rolls
Sam's
out.
Just going to be singing all week
you can
long.
Party with, you can party with JB and I.
Yeah, all right, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Jump on my list.
Sam's GABF is essentially a long-running musical. It's just a continual musical throughout the entire week. That's cool. So I want to touch on some of the topics that we were gonna cover that since the last podcast. Since last time, Anheuser-Busch had a large round of layoffs. Brandon, I know that you had an opinion on that. Do you want to chime in real quick and give us your take on these announced layoffs in the high-end division of Anheuser-Busch?
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I started working. The way I got into the beer industry was working for AB InBev, and they were AB InBev by the time I started working for them. I started with them as an engineering kind of intern. And eventually started working more on like process engineering stuff. But it was interesting because I had started working there about 2 years after InBev took over, formerly just Anheuser-Busch. And the culture had changed so much where it had, Anheuser-Busch, albeit large, had been much more of a family company. And then InBev took over and it corporatized to a whole new level. And the layoffs were still like pretty rampant when I was there. I think when I got hired, there was 140 salaried employees at the Cartersville plant, and by the time I left, there was about 80. So,
you talk about cultural change. Can you get into a little bit more of the specifics of like what, I guess, from a tangible and also visible standpoint, like what
culturally, how did that change feel? Like, what were some of the specifics? Like,
so I mean, it seems that layoffs. It's funny because like this recent news and recent focus on the high end layoff kind of makes it seem like it's not just a everyday thing for this corporation, and like it really was, like, honestly, since they took over the American beer scene of AB, it really has been every day. But yeah, so getting back to the cultural impact, I had heard so many ridiculous, like, mythical stories about August Busch and sort of like the Busch family and how they ran Anheuser-Busch prior to it becoming AB InBev. And like one of the like go-to sayings was, if you told August Busch that gold plating all the lines in the entire brewery would make the beer taste better, he'd have done it in about a half second. You know, clearly a very successful family, but also one that really did care about the quality of the product. And I know a lot of employees who were left from the pre-AB InBev takeover, who had been there prior and who'd been there for many of what they referred to as the golden years, would say that they really preferred working for that family. They actually really cared about the quality of the product. And a lot of the brewmasters will tell you that it was a nightmare when August would go on vacation to a different, you know, spot in the U.S., depending on where he went and which brewery fed that spot. They would always expect to receive a call of some complaint about some way that they had messed up Bud Light or Natural Light or, you know, or just regular Bud. And he was never wrong. I mean, the palate on this guy was incredible. That culture, that like attention to the product, it was lost by the time I was there. Honestly, you know, it was totally efficiency driven. I sat through so many meetings where, you know, all we talked about, you know, craft beer actually popped up every now and again as like, you know, we're discussing this fad that's going on in the industry right now. It's kind of an annoying thorn in our side, and we're sort of dealing with it. But yeah, so, you know, to speak to the layoffs in the high end recently, I'm not exactly, like, quiet about how I feel about, you know, macro beer as a whole, and specifically AB, because as far as macro beer goes, like, Coors is fine. Like, they make solid beer for when you're too poor to drink craft beer, and, like...
Hell yes.
Or if you just want to buy Coors, because it's good beer. In any case... you know, they don't like really go after craft with this like metastasistic cancer kind of mentality, but like AB really, really does. And it's been interesting to see so many brands. I mean, there have been a handful of brands that, like, I don't think I really need to like sugarcoat the fact that a lot of us in the industry are like, you know, whatever, like they got bought out by AB, no big deal. Like, I didn't really drink their stuff anymore anyway. They kind of became corporate and similar a long time ago, and then recently there was an acquisition that I think shook a lot of people, because it was like, man, this sort of overstepped the boundary. Like, this went into a part of the craft beer portfolio that I think a lot of us felt was less touchable. You know, it took a brand that I was personally a really huge fan of, and it was one of my favorite drink. I walked into Wicked Weed on the second day they were open, and I thought, like, man, these guys are incredible. Like, I think it was maybe like 21 and 5 days old at that point. Met the brewing staff, met the owners, really loved it. And then, like, to have this one fall as the acquisition pool was like, shit, nothing's untouchable. Like, they're literally going after every part of our market they can. And we know how they play their game. You know, and not to say this is a bad thing, but they meet economies of scale. They bring down the overall market price. But it's bad in terms of the effect it has on options for the craft consumer. To see them lean out their high-end labor is not a surprise. Like, not even a little bit. And honestly, I'm not really surprised to see a lot of jaded responses from the craft industry, who, you know, only a couple months ago were watching these really just lip service-y kind of half-assed apologies for, well, you know, we sold because it's like better for benefits and it's better for...
Yeah, so give us all these resources to be able to create our products and scale up at a much quicker...
And, strategic partnerships and how that works great and equally for everybody. And then, like...
Wine's the enemy.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Wine drinker.
It's definitely wine.
Oh, we've been going about this wrong the entire time.
Yeah, and not to like overly speak ill in any way, but just to say like it's not a surprise. Like that layoffs and efficiency are the culture of that company. It's not craft beer. It's not quality. It's not options. It's just profit. I mean, like everyone in that company, like. You know, the top talk when I was at AB was like, oh, do you guys know dividends are coming up? So, like, buy into the stock, but then be ready to sell the next day because, like, the prices are going to go way down. Like, that's what everyone paid attention to. It wasn't, I mean, it was kind of the quality of the product. And you still had some really talented people there, but less and less as time goes on.
Jesse, what was your take when you saw the announcements of the layoffs?
To be honest, he kind of just took all the words out of my mouth. You know, he's got an inside perspective on it way more than I ever have, and it's kind of just what I picture. Just they are a major multinational corporation that could give two shits. And we joke about them, and we make fun of them all the time. Like, even when I'm waiting for this $1 billion check, like, we like Coors. We drink Coors a lot. Fuck Budweiser. I don't know. They're a terrible company. They do terrible things. It happens once a month. I feel like every podcast we talk about the next terrible thing they've done, and I'm sure the next one we will too. And I don't know. I mean, if anybody's under that umbrella and thinks that they're safe, I think that's like living on the coast and then you're not going to get by a hurricane. Like, there's a good chance that nothing bad is going to happen. So.
Yeah, you just beg them every 3 months to move.
Yeah.
Because another storm's coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, for me, this is I think, Brandon, you touched on some really important points there of saying, like, this is part of the culture of layoffs and efficiencies. And I think, for me, the biggest takeaway from the announcement was the fact that they actually identified efficiencies as a reason. And you know, I think that that's such a departure from their cookie-cutter messaging that for so long has gone behind these acquisitions of saying, like, oh, we want to provide them with unlimited resources. We want to, you know, make this the best product and allow them to grow their craft line and allow them to do what you know, expand their creativity. And it's like, no, at the end of the day, it's about, you're going to go back to cutting corners. You have shareholders that you have to answer to. You know, it's a different game. It's a different industry. It's not something that they can fall back on as an excuse for these acquisitions anymore. I mean, it really kind of was surprising, and maybe it shouldn't have been, because Anheuser-Busch has always been very tone deaf in their approach, but it just speaks more to the fact that they aren't authentic and they aren't fully carrying out what they proclaim to be when they are dealing with craft. And so I think it's a major, you know, I hate seeing layoffs of any kind for any kind of person, because, you know, losing your job is tough. And I think it's never a good thing to be celebrated, but it is for craft beer. I think it's an argument point of saying, like, no, this is all smoke and mirrors here. You're not actually standing behind what you're boasting about when you acquire.
And, like, what percentage of that company as a whole do you think actually cares about beer? And out of their entire employee infrastructure,
point.
Like,
yeah.
What percentage do you think?
Yeah.
75? I mean, or less, so 25%. You think it's the sales reps probably the most?
And Brandon, I don't know.
They probably care more about partying. They care more about tickets to things.
I was
yeah.
saying,
yeah,
and Brandon,
luxuries.
Did you have much of an interaction with, like, the corporate office for ABI once the transition actually occurred? Because, you know, I've talked to a number of people that have worked with, you know, either worked for the corporate office or worked around it, and, you know, and I don't want to stereotype here, but a lot of those, the folks who work from the corporate side of things are very much of that kind of East Coast Ivy League kind of like, it's all about the business, it's all about the final shareholder, like, value and whatnot. And it's like Hunter said, it's not about the beer. Did you get that sense from the higher ups?
Yeah, and so, like, the program that I was a part of when I worked for them was kind of like the entrance point for what they called global management trainees. So people who, you entered the company, you worked in different locations for a year at a time. It was like a 3-year program, and you rotated around the U.S. and then you rotated around the globe after that. And so, yeah, like I was privy to a lot of conversations about, you know, where we were going in terms of regional management and dissolving regional management into like more territorial management and U.S. versus non-U.S. and so on and so forth. And, you know, AB's attack plan, it wasn't like the beer was never part of the conversation. I think the like most beer-centric conversation we ever had was about the introduction of Select 55, and it was like, can you imagine how crazy women are going to go about 55 calorie light beer? And it's like,
let's count.
Gloss over how sexist that is, yeah. And go straight into I don't even know.
It's just so completely off base with
you know, it was just like, okay, so like American sales are down 2%. We're growing China and Brazil, and we're growing South Africa. So that was the corporate culture. You know, it was very much just focused on like just shifting and planning new things in different spots. I don't mean to be like overly critical of that to an extent, because you know, as much as like that seems unwelcome in craft beer, like it is every other industry.
Sure.
You know, it's the norm for large companies. And honestly, I think you're starting to see more and more kind of traditional business concepts emerging into the craft scene, as you know, the dynamics changed a lot in the last couple of years in terms of market share growth, and with the way the acquisitions are going and the way that the value to pay is not continuing to go up scalably with what craft beer is doing.
To compete on a larger scale,
And you don't have to be vindictive, and you don't have to be so inhumane about it. Sure. I think one of the cool things about craft beer, and one of the cool things about inefficiency, is that the extra dollar you pay at a bar for a craft beer, you think about that as an extra person or two people that every, you know, beer you drink employs, versus the, like, you know, the one person that employs every 10 beers you drink from a larger brewery. It's one of the beauties of inefficiency is how many more people we can bring into this realm, and I think that's pretty cool. But
absolutely.
But yeah, you know, it is interesting, especially coming from, you know, my background is tech. Not a very extensive background, mind you, because I'm not very old. But that's like the industry that I came from, where like the culture is make something sellable, be bought by one of the biggest guys there is. That's the victory. Like being bought by Google, being bought by Microsoft, like that is the ultimate achievement in tech for a lot of people.
Yeah, these
anyway.
Unicorn brands or
exactly.
Whatever.
But then in craft, it's like it's the complete opposite culture. It's like staying grassroots, staying independent. Like that's the victory. Being independent in that. So it's kind of interesting, like mentally and emotionally, to balance like this, the conflict between like, I understand, like, I mean, I have to run a business beyond just brewing the beer and being creative. I have to run a business. I have to pay the bills. Like they keep going up, and like, you know, the product price doesn't really get to go up at the same rate. So like, how do you compensate for that? So it is an interesting conversation, and like, I don't know. It's got a lot of facets. It's hard to really digest it, like, simply.
And on the inverse, you see great craft breweries. And I do have to mention that even ABI has had a significant contribution in terms of hurricane relief, you know. But you see so much instantly being done by local craft brands for Hurricane Irma and Harvey. And kind of the ability to come together both from a beer perspective, macro and micro, really impressive to see our industry responding in that way. So, you know, you can harp on the big guy as much as you want, but in the end, we're all, you know, when it really matters, you can still come together and do good as a whole for beer. So, guys, I want to thank you all so much for coming on the show. Rhiannon and also Brandon, I really appreciate your all's time and joining us, and it's really cool to hear a little bit more behind On Tap Credit Union. Brandon, is really great to get this insight into New Image, and you know, we really encourage everybody who's coming out here for the Great American Beer Festival to come out and visit New Image, and really tremendous products, tremendous beers that are coming out of here, and the Colorado Invitational sounds awesome, so really pumped for you guys. Hunter, Jesse, Sam, great catching you guys.
I'm kind of bummed we didn't play whack-a-mole while we were here.
Yeah, that's true.
I could have been the mole. I would have been the mole.
I'll be the mole.
I like how Hunter references something that like none of our listeners can see.
Yep,
we have these giant microphones that look like whack-a-mole
hammer type things. And
those microphones are pretty tough. You could probably play whack-a-mole with those.
But I am excited to be podcasting with you guys here in the next week.
Oh, boy.
We're going to be at Good Zur next, what is it, next Wednesday?
It's coming right up.
Sponsored by Zantac.
So we're going to be talking to Colorado's first sour only beer bar next Tuesday, September 26th, I believe at 6 o'clock. So if anyone actually wants to come out and hang out and drink some sour beers, they
can.
Speaking
of Tuesday, tacos?
Oh, God. Here we go.
Oh, God.
Back to
he chimes in, and it's tacos.
El Camino. All right. Hey, and then,
hey, I didn't say it. You said it.
And then once again, we're going to be broadcasting twice during the week of the Great American Beer Festival, the first of which is going to be Wednesday, October 4th, 3:30 at Avanti with Sam Calagione. And then Thursday after the session, 10 o'clock at night, Thursday, October 5th. At Avanti Food and Beverage as well. We're going to have Jason Zimbrunnen, founder of Ratio Beerworks. We're also going to have several of our national beer writing friends, our national beer journalists are going to come on the show, and it's going to be a lot of fun, guys. Hunter over here is creating his own soundboard.
He's been turned down.
Can we just mute his mic for the rest?
What?
Well, guys, once again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This has been episode 41 of the Porchcast. Be sure to follow us on Stitcher, iTunes, and whatever listening device that you have. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Porch Drinking CO. Thanks so much, guys. How you doing?
Thank you. Check you later.
There it is.
All right. While many of you are out there stowing away bottles of bourbon barrel-aged stouts, lambics, and other wilds, it's equally important to stow away some money for a rainy day. Saving money and paying off debt are two of the biggest New Year's resolutions for 2017, so do it the smart way. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com, start saving money and lowering your taxes today. Go to latitudefinancialgroup.com to schedule a complimentary meeting now. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com. Whether you're planning to build out a larger beer cellar, shopping for a new home, or buying a new car, OnTap Credit Union provides the tools and services needed to help with any major life transition. Learn how OnTap Credit Union can help with home loans and streamlining financing for a new car. OnTap Credit Union also specializes in crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, people who drink it, and the communities where they all reside and do business. Just like today's episode here in Arvada. Visit their Arvada branch or find out more on ontapcu.org.